Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Happ drives one in the air, deep right center. Back goes Ramos near the center field fence. That ball is gone. Two-run homer, Ian Happ. Just to the right of straightaway. Cubs lead 5-3. I knew he hit it well, but the way Ramos was going back, I thought he had a play on it, Ron. It just kept going. Almost looked like it hit the top of the fence and bounced over into the Cubs bullpen.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That did the trick, man. Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win! All that. Yes, Cubs 5. San Francisco 3 in 10 innings. Ian Happ with the game-winning two-run homer. But, man, woof, getting there is difficult for the Cubs. Man, oh, man. I didn't even mention Nico Hoerner hit a two-run homer today. I mean, it looked like the Cubs were going to be okay. It looked like in the sixth inning they were going to be just 3-0 Cubs in the sixth inning, and then that lead would fade to zero, to nothing, as in the Giants would tie the game up, and it seemed nearly impossible that they would actually come back and win the game. Well, they didn't have to come back, but they had to overcome what felt like a devastating blow. We are hoping to talk to Bob Nightingale of USA Today about it here in just a little bit. We'd certainly invite you in on the show as well at 312-644-6767. Stacey King will be on with us live coming up at 8 o'clock. But indeed, let us talk to the baseball columnist for the USA Today, Bob Nightingale, joining us now on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. How are you, Bob?
Yeah, doing great. Thank you.
Excellent. We're just talking about this Cubs game today, Bob. They beat San Francisco 5-3 and 10 on an Ian Happ game-winning two-run homer in the 10th inning, and it's just like so much this year about the Cubs. Everything is stress level 10, it feels like, for the Cubs this year. It wasn't supposed to be like this for the Cubs this year. Was it 38-44 at this point, Bob? You weren't feeling that, were you?
No, I figured it'd be right there, to win the division. Cincinnati was a nice young team. You knew they could win the division, and you had the Cubs. Milwaukee was a team. People said, okay, they're probably done. They traded away their Cy Young guy in Corbin Burns. They don't have their all world closer in Devin Williams. Lost two more starters during the season. So what they're doing is unreal. But yeah, nobody saw the Cubs playing this bad.
Did we misevaluate? Because I picked the Cubs to win too. Like, I thought, and some of it I based on what they did last year to overcome a crummy start to the season, then to eventually get to 10 games over the 500 mark. But then they got, to within a point where they should have been in the playoffs. The percentages were overwhelming in their favor. They don't win. They choke the season. But I chose to, and I feel like a lot of us actually chose the positive part of that season where they turned their year around and then they were going to add on. Should we have chosen the part where they blew it at the end instead? Is that who the Cubs really were or are?
Yeah, perhaps when you look at it. But, if you had said, here's Shota, turn off the National League like he's been. I know he's not been the same guy up late, but still, no one saw this coming. Of all the
right
scouts and executives that saw him, they were blown away what he's done so far. So if you had said, okay, he's doing this, you'd think the Cubs would be running away with the NL Central. So yeah, maybe you're exactly right. What happened toward the end of the season, maybe that threw up more red flags and people want to believe that they're an average team. And I think, too, that's what you saw. It took long, Cody Bellinger. A lot of teams stay away from him, saying we're not sure, which Cody Bellinger you're going to get. He's having an okay season, but obviously not having the same season he had a year ago.
spot on with that, and it crept up today. There were a couple of big, glaring RBI opportunities for Cody Bellinger in this game. A win for the Cubs, 5-3 over the Giants, that he did not capitalize on. So some of that, you know, I think that most of us, I mean, that the approval rating on the Cody Bellinger signing was very high around here based on what he did last year and Cody Bellinger's reputation as a former MVP. So that was all good. I guess I look at it now in hindsight, and we talked about it then, and I'm sure, Bob, you talked about it as well. It still felt like going into this season they were a bat shy, because it's not as if Bellinger was an add-on. He was the guy that you already had. So it felt like they were a bat short. Did you feel that at the beginning of the season? And I guess none of us knew it would hurt them the way it apparently has.
No, I mean, even though, you know, I didn't think, you know, Bellinger would have a year he had a year ago. I don't think most teams thought the same way. Even the Cubs. I mean, they didn't jump in a bidding war. That's why it took so long for him to to sign, because the offers were not there whatsoever. But I think, you know, there was probably too much stock put in Morrell. You know, they thought he was going to be the big guy. You know, Crow Armstrong. Okay, here's a top prospect. You know, scouts kind of soured on him. Said, wait a minute now, we're not sure if he can, you know, hit in the major leagues. So I think they put a lot of stock in some young guys, and it hasn't turned out, at least so far.
That's such a great point on Morrell. That cannot be underestimated. They did. They said, you know what? We know he's not going to play great defense, but we need this guy's bat. And they really were depending on it. So that's always worth remembering. I guess the question is how, at this point, do you fix it? And we're all asking the question. And as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline, I mean, we know the trouble areas, but what is plausible that the Cubs president of baseball operations, Jed Hoyer, could and would do for this team, especially if they can continue on this struggling trajectory?
Well, it's really need some late inning bullpen help. You get that, you know, without giving up your whole farm system. They can use the first baseman. So they'll love to get their hands on Pete Alonso. So is Seattle. So if you're the Cubs fans, you're rooting against the Mets every night to make sure they're out of it. So they do trade Pete Alonso. And they trade Alonso, they can be right there, you know, in the bidding. So yeah. they need the Mets to be out of the race.
That's a great point. Yeah, they're okay. Cubs fans, you know, historically have been pretty good at rooting against the Mets, and so I think that they could probably turn that on. but yeah, and unfortunately, Javier Saad goes on the disabled list today. Shota Imanaga, you mentioned him. He was good today. Not dominating, not lights out. I mean, he's kind of coming back to which is still a really good pitcher, but maybe not crazy dominant like a lot of us that had thought maybe he could continue to carry that on. That certainly was not going to be a thing. I guess the last thing on the Cubs, and I do want to talk to you about the White Sox as well. No matter what they do this year, you know, if they are able to add, you know, if there's a trade for Pete Alonso, if that comes, or maybe they add a bullpen guy or a reliever, do they have to, and who knows what happens, do you think that after this season the Cubs like have to kind of change course again within this? I don't know if we're still within the rebuild window. I don't think we are. I think it's the Cubs are supposed to win. But how big of a turn do you think Jed Hoyer has to take at this point?
Well, I think they're on the rebuild mode. You gotta win. You gotta play. You get in the playoffs. I think it would be, and I say catastrophe, but it'd be a nightmare of a season if they don't make the playoffs. You know, I mean, look around the National League, there's so much mediocrity. It'd be embarrassing not to make the playoffs with so many, you know, mediocre teams around. There's only, you know, three, four good teams, really, in baseball. And, you know, National League, you might get in with an under 500 record. So, yeah, and I think, you know, no matter what happens, either they, you know, creep in and get bounced early or don't make it at all, I think you probably have to spend some more money off season. So, you know what, we got to get that big-time bat. Yeah, you know, we got to go get a Christian Walker from Arizona Diamondbacks, who's our first baseman. He's a free agent. Or get a guy like Alonso.
It's so early into Jed Hoyer's time as the big boss. You know, he was always the number two to Theo Epstein. How much pressure is he under as the Cubs? I don't know philosophically where they are and what Tom Ricketts' expectations are. Should he be sweating a little bit, or is he get a long term sort of look and chance here with the Cubs in that chair?
I would think at least another year before the fire gets hot as far as a possible change. So I would think, yeah, if this is 2025 and August, September, it looks like they're going nowhere, then I think it's possible because you're already, there's a third different manager here, in the last, 4 years.
Yeah.
You can't just keep changing managers. Yeah. Then you start looking at the whole front office.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I think that's a good answer too, because it does feel. I mean, his name's coming up a lot. Like, I see it on the text lines and people calling in and hosts talking about it on the screen as you start. But I think it's still peripheral, because I think it's like I don't think he's been given quite the time yet. But for the first time, whether it was he or Theo, this is the first time I really feel like, okay, there's a little bit of heat on Jed Hoyer. To there's a new expectation, right, Bob? Like, this organization, and he's part of why the precedent is set harder. The Chicago Cubs are expected to win, period, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, the window should have been a lot longer than it was, when they, reached the playoffs there in, 15, and of course, 16, they win it, back in 17 and stuff. And then it's like, wait a minute now, this should have been a powerhouse for a lot longer. So, and I think, in this case too, it's like, they got to start winning again. I mean, it never should have got this dicey in the first place. You can't rebuild too much, got too much payroll in there and stuff like that. So, no, I would think, if they don't make the playoffs, or if they go out early in the playoffs, then I think they have to be very, very aggressive in the offseason to get help. I really do.
Yep, amen. Yep, and the new expectation is set, and that's good for everybody, but the Cubs are just going to have to deal with a little bit more heat. Talking to Bob Nightingale, baseball columnist at USA Today, I'm Mark Grody here on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The score is a few more moments with Bob. I do want to talk about the White Sox, who had a nice win themselves today, 1-0 over the Braves, but the record still devastating for the White Sox, 22-61. They ended a four-game losing streak. What's the latest in terms of Pedro Grifol? Is he going to be allowed to be here for the rest of the season, or could he still be fired in season?
I guess he could be fired in season, but, everything I hear is that they're going to be, patient with him. I mean, it doesn't matter who's managing that team right now. Nothing's going to change because you have such a, inferior talent on the field. And it's going to get worse before it gets better, because you can start trading these guys away, So a lot of these key guys could be gone by July 30th. So, why pay another manager to come in when nothing's going to change? It's not like you're trying to get this team to playoffs, this year. So I would think, toward the end of the season, around September, and they start taking a close look. It's like, okay, we want to make a change in the offseason, or you might as well wait to the offseason.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have more candidates. Ox Cora is a free agent from Boston. In Miami, Skip Schumacher is a free agent. So you have different bench coaches and coaches from other staffs. So, yeah, I think it'd be kind of silly to make a change now, because you want to have a big, widespread of guys to choose from, come October.
It would be kind of a nice change if they were to go with one of those name guys. I don't know. Would that be, God, I hate saying this, but would that be a tough sell to those guys to want to come to the White Sox, where, I'm sorry, but it doesn't look like this is a one-year project right now. Like, whomever the manager is next year is probably going to be having to endure some big-time losing still next year as well.
No, you're absolutely right. It is a tough sell. Just like when you're trying to get a free agent player, it's a tough sell to get a guy to come to lose an organization. That's why getting John Lester was so important for the Cubs, you know, back there after after 2014, just to, you know, convince him, okay, things are going to turn around. So same thing as a manager, you know, getting a guy to say, okay, yeah, you're going to lose the first year, maybe the first two, but we're going to be committed to, you know, turn this thing around and get the players you need. So, but you're absolutely right. It would be a tough sale.
Yeah, so that's another hurdle. I mean, you just don't want to be the guy, the facilitator, before the team starts to win. So I think that's tricky for both the White Sox and for potential candidates. I want to ask you, too, about Chris Getz, the general manager of this team. He never really had a chance in terms of public opinion, and maybe justifiably so, because he was part of what everybody perceived to be the problem, or the organization as a whole. So he's a guy that was promoted from what was perceived as a bad organization. But I want to ask you what the reputation is of Chris Getz as, you know, not in the, in, as a front office guy, and how far behind is he in terms on trying to get this organization turned around? Does he have the chops reputationally to do this?
I think just, yeah, it remains to be seen, you know, as far as, you know, his first big trade already was, you know, the Dylan Cease trade. You know, we'll see how that turns out. You know, take years to really know. But same thing here. When you're dealing with a guy like Crochet and, you know, Luis Robert and stuff like that, you better get some studs back, particularly for Crochet. So, and then I think your, you know, job's on line, because if you don't make the right trades, you know, you're going to, you know, set the organization back. Same with the thing with the draft. Obviously, you're going to have a, you know, they pick high this year and pick high again next year. You better be right in those picks too, you know, or else you're, you know, or else you're gone quickly. So, yeah, I think the jury's definitely out on Chris Getz. Everybody kind of says the same thing. Hey, you know, nice guy, everything that they enjoy talking to him. But as far as being the guy to turn things around, you know, I don't think anybody knows for sure. Nobody knows for sure until probably a couple of years from now.
Do you think there's any chance that either or both of Luis Robert and Garrett Crochet are not moved at the trade deadline?
I think there's a better chance for Luis Robert isn't traded, just because he's, you know, I mean, Crochet's got a couple of years left too, but I think Robert a better chance of staying, because I think with Crochet, strike with iron's hot. He's probably never going to have a higher trade value when he's doing. And at least teams know, too, like, okay, even if I can't, you know, run him as a starter down the stretch and put him back in a bullpen, you know, I mean, I could do most of them now, but he will the next 2 years. And the fact he's only making $800,000, I mean, his trade value is so high, I don't think you can afford to take the risk of going past July 30th, you know, unless you just completely shut him down and say, okay, I'm going to get more value this winter. That is the same reason they traded Dylan Cease so close to opening day, just to not want to take the chance of Cease getting hurt early on.
Yeah. Do you know if the White Sox have the stomach to do another true rebuild? Is that they didn't think, like, Jerry Reinsdorf obviously wanted to get this thing going quickly and winning fast again, part of how he justified the hiring of Chris Getz. I guess from that perspective, things have gone horribly wrong. This is something that maybe they weren't saying they could stomach it, but it sounds like they had to have been a little bit realistic in knowing what this season was going to be about, right?
I don't think they thought it was going to be this bad. I thought, you know, maybe a 70-92 season, or things get, you know, things were better, maybe really went well, a 75-win season. I don't remember anybody in the organization thinking it was going to be this bad, you know, historically bad, where yeah, you're the worst team of all time. So, no, they, you know, I know they want to, you know, rebuild this thing as fast as possible, but even though you're in the right division, you know, you still have very good teams in Cleveland and Chicago. Detroit's coming on.
Yeah.
So it's hard to, you know, see them being a viable contender even for a wild card spot, you know, until 2026 at the earliest.
Yeah, yeah, man. I did want to ask you, too, for the Chris Sale today, the ex-White Sox, just dazzling, except for Luis Robert hitting a home run off him, but seven innings, four run, or one run on four hits, struck out 11, walked one. What do you thought about the kind of second life to Chris Sale? Still got it, doesn't he, Bob?
Yeah, such a great competitor, and a fun guy to root for, really is. Yeah, he's a gamer. It's a kudos to Atlanta for believing that he's going to bounce back, you know, from the injuries, and he has. But that's where, you know, when we're talking about Crochet, you can't be wrong like you were in the Chris Sale trade. I mean, they didn't get back anybody. You know, those guys, none of them turn out, you know, look good on paper at the time. But, you know, none of those guys became the players you want. So you better be right on Crochet.
Oh, man, that's true. And, you know, obviously different people, you know, than Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn. They're no longer here, but yeah, that's a great point, man. It's a great comp. I didn't mean to stumble into that, but that's, you are absolutely right on that. I guess the last question I would ask you about the White Sox then, is how healthy are they organizationally? I mean, beyond just Chris Getz, but as far as their farm system and where they're going with it and when they could start spitting out major leaguers to this roster that can contribute.
Well, yeah. I mean, the farm system's down, too. It's not like they have a stock farm system like, you know, the Padres or Dodgers or, you know, certainly not Baltimore. So, yeah, that's why they better, you know, strike gold in the draft, you know, coming up next month. They better be right on all these guys they trade away. You better get the right prospects back, you know, too. And that, you know, that will certainly rebuild the minor league system. I mean, just by making those trades, it should have put them as a top 10 farm system. But yeah, but it's a you know, right now it's, you know, it's a mess. You know, it's, you know, everybody in baseball says I can turn that thing around. It's going to take time. You know, you hate to do what Baltimore did or Houston did. You know, when you're losing 110 games, you know, for four or five straight years, it paid off for both those franchises, particularly Baltimore. But Baltimore, you know, they hit in the draft. You can't miss. You know, even guy like Gavin Stone for the Dodgers. You know, he's pitching lights out. He's a rookie. I mean, he's a guy that everybody could have had, and he was a fifth round draft pick. So you got to draft well.
Yeah, you do. And you got me thinking about that Baltimore team now. And what's really amazing, Bob, about that team is that they did strike. I mean, all their, like, you go through their lineup, it's like first round pick, like all these guys. And then the most amazing part to me, low key, is that Brandon Hyde survived, man. You know what I mean? Like, and he was a guy who was a rookie, man. Felt like he was the convenient rebuild dude, but that is, like, it's pretty rare when that guy gets to stay on board. And I know him a little bit, and I'm sure you do too. Couldn't be a better guy, but man, that is a rarity for Major League Baseball, and Brandon Hyde surviving that.
Yeah, kudos to Mike Elias, the GM, for sticking with him. Well, it would have been easy to fire him and say, you know, you're losing the right guy. Yeah. Stuck with him and say, hey, this isn't your fault. And you're right. You know, in his farm development background, he's kind of a, I think Jason McLeod by him in the organization, but just a perfect guy to have for a rebuilding team. And, you know, and look at him now, won Manager of the Year last year, and they're a powerful team. I don't think there's any organization that's in better shape right now than the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, no doubt. Bob, thank you so much for your time. I always appreciate talking to you and the information that you give us.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you.
Yep, that is Bob Nightingale from the USA Today with all sorts of good stuff. Yeah, Brandon Hyde, if he was the Cubs' first base coach for a lot of years, and part of the time that I was doing pre and post, so I got to know Brandon Hyde a little bit, just like the nicest dude in the world, and then obviously a very good manager. But, yeah, most guys, man, we've seen it in this town, Ricky Renteria and Dale Swaim and all these guys. They don't usually survive the 100 lost storms. And somehow Brandon Hyde came out on top. By the way, the Sox did win today, too. They beat the Braves 1-0 on a bullpen effort. Chad Kuhl started the game, but he only went three innings. Justin Anderson, Jared Schuster, John Brebbia, Michael Kopech, they all combine and get the job done. Chris Sale was great. Luis Robert homered off of him. That's the way it went down for the White Sox. When we return, let's talk about the Chicago Bulls and their draft and what Arturas Karnišovas is saying. That's coming up next on The Score.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I had a blast last night co-hosting our Bulls draft coverage live from the Bulls training facility right by the United Center on the west side, the Advocate Center. I got to do that with Chuck Swirsky, the voice of the Bulls. So we got to see it all go down last night with the Bulls drafting at number 11 overall, Matas Buzelis, the 6'10 forward, again drafted number 11 overall. But yeah, it was kind of a pumped up night. Always a lot of energy for drafts. I've covered several of them in my life, but just being out there and you're literally on in the big, huge gym where the Bulls practice, where it's a couple courts size worth. So, we're sitting there at our broadcast station, and then you look up and over to the right in the balconies and you see the offices, and one of them is, as we were told, that was the Bulls war room. So that was upstairs from where we were. We can stare them down. The curtains were closed, though. Man, we weren't getting to see anything. And then as you look across the gym and a little bit around in some of the office, you look in an office sitting in the big chair. Hey, there's Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the Chicago Bulls, out here on draft night, just hanging out, hobnobbing with a few executives up in his office, but with the clear glass, he could see in. And so just to give people a little flavor of what a draft spectacle can be like, at least on a local level here in Chicago, out at the Advocate Center. But yeah, they take Matas Buzelis with the pick, and there were, this is a guy who chose to play professionally for the NBA G League Unite after playing for a couple of high schools, including Hinsdale Central. But in 26 starts last year, Buzelis had 14.3 points per game, 6.9 rebounds, shot just 27.3 from three. So to survive in this league, it's always good to get better at making three-pointers. So that's it with him. I don't know how heavily he'll be invited into the Bulls rotation early on this year. If he's more of a project, I can't get a great feel for that. So we'll leave it at that right now for Buzelis. I think that some of the bigger, and we'll let Arturas tell you about the draft pick here a little bit later on, but I am still, despite the draft night last night and the fun that we had talking about prospects from college basketball, the big picture stuff with the Bulls is still what is number one for me, and I think a lot of you as well, in terms of what is next for the Bulls and how do you rebuild this Bulls team. Just talking about that in association with Jerry's other team, the White Sox. But Arturas Karnišovas has some decisions to make and clearly has made some of them already. One of the big ones that he made recently, decision-wise, was I am trading Alex Caruso. And in so doing, with the Oklahoma City Thunder, Josh Giddey makes his way to the Bulls. So here's what Karnišovas said for the first time, getting his reaction here on that acquisition, Josh Giddey.
He's still 21. His production was really good the last 3 years. He has room for growth, and I think, coming here to Chicago, he's going to be able to demonstrate more playmaking, and he'll make everyone else better, probably one of the areas that he's going to get better. Most of the players that come to our league, they become a better shooters. So I think once he becomes a better shooter, he's going to be a threat, and then he's going to be able to play make much better. So, but like I said, didn't, you know, I was close to him, and he was, you know, 6'8", four guard, you know, great size. And I always liked the fact that he rebounded, which we also need help with. So,
well, he is building up the guard position, that is for sure, with now you have Giddey and Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu and Dalen Terry. So it's interesting, like, but he's going to get a chance, and that is what, unfortunately, sure feels like all of a sudden DeMar DeRozan has become expendable in the Bulls' eyes, and we're going to get to that question here, and maybe that question has been answered, DeMar DeRozan. But this is a guy who I think both sides are interested in getting a long-term deal done as well. So, you know, Giddey's going to get a shot. Giddey up for Giddey. But I think one of the bigger questions about Josh Giddey coming here was, hey, why didn't you get more from Oklahoma City with all of the resources that they have and all the draft picks that they have now and in the future? Why was this just seemingly an Alex Caruso for Josh Giddey deal, Arturis Karnišovas?
Well, I think that's a trade that, you know, we preferred over picks because, you know, it's hard to acquire players this young, this productive, that early in their careers, especially when he already has like 11 triple doubles in his career. So yeah, so we were just excited, and we thought that was the, you know, the price to pay for Josh.
So this is a guy that Arturis Karnišovas is kind of, you know, putting his money on, that he is, trust me, is what it feels like Arturis Karnišovas is saying. Trust me, this was worth it to give up Alex Caruso to get Josh Giddey. You do that. This is me paraphrasing or putting myself in what it sounds like Karnišovas is saying. So just like that doesn't outrage me in any way, shape, or form, but I do mark it down. I do mark it and say, okay, I'm going to, you know, let's see. Like, if you're, you know, one that is, oh, like, I'm totally good with Arturis Karnišovas getting another chance to build this thing up in the way that he wants to. It's too soon to start talking about getting rid of a guy, but you do have to note it. You do have to note the things that he is doing. And right now he is telling everybody that this guy has got some massive upside and he is to be reckoned with. So that's what I'm hearing from Karnišovas. And God, I hope he's right. Like, I want him to be right. And Giddey being only 21 years old, you know, you could see why somebody would make a bet on somebody like Giddey at this point. And that's exactly what Karnišovas is telling us that he is doing right now. Let's get on to the DeMar DeRozan stuff, though, because we know what's been going on here with, you know, the Josh Giddey acquisition, with the fact that DeMar DeRozan is probably not somebody who is going to be that interested in being on a team that probably isn't going to win this year. I don't know what his stomach for being a part of this team would be right now, but really, what's the temperature of the Bulls on wanting him at this point? This is what Arturis Karnišovas said last night at the Advocate Center.
Arturis, you've said publicly many times you hope to re-sign DeMar DeRozan. There's been quite a bit of speculation about his future. Obviously, he can make his own choice starting Sunday. Mm-hmm. Are you still confident in re-signing him, and is that something the organization still wants to do?
As I said also before, we're going to look at everything. You know, everything is on the table, and, you know, it's still an option.
Okay. Real quick following up. You said also you wouldn't answer a kind of overall philosophy of directional, but you'll talk to us after free agency. If memory serves, you don't talk after free agency. Next time you talk,
well, I'm going to see you hopefully in summer league, and we can, you know, chat. You know, I'll tell you all about it. So
I don't know about that. I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay? There you go. So I think yeah, it's important time. You know we still have to, you know, tomorrow, second day of the draft, and then free agency starts, and you know, like I said, you know, week and 2 weeks away from now, we're gonna be able to comment on that.
I have some good stuff there with Casey Johnson, low key, like that friendly voice, that of I hear it, but that was him saying, I'm going to hold you to it. Okay. That's the realness right there. But, man, you hear it. You hear it from Arturis Karnišovas about DeMar DeRozan. I mean, they're not talking with the same enthusiasm that they once were. And, it just doesn't, as a lot of people have been saying, it's about 50-50 or feels like. That's what Mark Schanowski told us the other night when we had him on. It felt like it's down, from 80-20. The Bulls are going to keep him to a 50-50 situation with DeMar DeRozan. So it's just fascinating to think about what the direction of this team is. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, let's try to get that answer from Arturis Karnišovas, because he was asked about the direction of this team. You got that. And also, well, how's it going to work on the floor with a couple of guys like Giddey and then and Matas Bouzelis? We'll hear what Karnišovas has to say about him playing with the Chicago Bulls. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
We are talking about the Chicago Bulls. Matas Bouzelis was drafted last night, but we're looking at the bigger picture stuff like Josh Giddey and what it means for DeMar DeRozan, and sounding more and more like DeMar DeRozan could be headed elsewhere than the Chicago Bulls. I mean, any number of reasons now, I suppose, but I think the number one reason that I don't think he's going to be back is because DeMar DeRozan's not going to want to be back, because the Bulls are going to take a hit this year. That's just what's going to happen, and I doubt DeRozan at this point in his career, every year that you're into your middle 30s, it's urgent as an athlete. That's urgency, assuming you are one that wants to win, and DeMar DeRozan has been very clear about wanting to win and to be a winner, which he has been most of his career. So I think it's very little chance that DeMar DeRozan is going to be with the Chicago Bulls at this point. As for Zach LaVine, there's no way he's back with the Bulls. They will trade him too. I don't know that anybody's going to be happy with whatever quote-unquote haul they end up getting for LaVine, but both those guys will be gone by the time this season begins. Let's hear, though, from Arturis Karnišovas on what is the direction of the team.
I think directional stuff we're going to be able to more establish in a week or two. So we're going to wait. I'm going to let the free agency process work it out, and we're going to have more information. I can comment that later.
Okay. All right. Got more meetings to have, and I guess no GM is going to come out and say exactly what they're working on, what they want to do, but I suppose there's some generalized things that can be used to throw out there occasionally. But I guess we're all just going to have to wait and see what the exact direction is. But it's starting to take place, and that is to be, if nothing else, younger. I mean, you're like I said, I'm not seeing DeMar DeRozan or Zach LaVine on this roster, and then you bring in a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old. Yeah, Bouzelis is only 19. And Josh Giddey is 21. So you're going younger, and you are going unproven. So that's kind of a dangerous place to be, especially if you're a veteran player. Last thing from Arturis Karnišovas. He was asked how Matas Bouzelis and Josh Giddey may fit.
So I'm very qualified to say his name, Matas Bouzelis. His versatility, it's very, evident, in terms of his position. Our league is moving towards, like multi-positional wings, and just size and athleticism and versatility. He can put it on the floor, and then switchability, right? He averaged more than 2 blocks per game, so... I don't know exactly what to expect, next year, but I know that those guys are going to be on the floor, and they're very versatile. So, and then, once we know after a couple of weeks what we look like, we can, obviously talk organizational and obviously with Billy how we're going to play.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see those guys, presumably in summer league, when, you know, that's not necessarily a real indication, but it's a start. It's a start, and I'll be more interested in that part of the season, which I think we'd all kind of lost interest in this Bulls core, and it sure feels like Karnišovas waited 1 year longer than he had to, but now he's doing it. And I do think about one of the guys that I'm really fascinated to see what he does for an encore is Coby White. Was last year truly a coming out party to a guy that is turning into a star? Like, he's not there yet, but is he on that trajectory? I like being able to ask that question. That is definitely a positive part of the Bulls that we've gotten to this point with Coby White, who felt like at one point he was easily on his way out the door, be an easy guy to make a decision on come contract time. And he changed that whole thing last year. It changed fast for Coby White. And now we get to ask questions like, could he be a star? So I sure like that. I like that part. And, you know, there's still Io Dosunmu. And you know who's going to be who's officially feels like the oldest piece on the team and maybe starting to become unnecessary? Gabe Ramirez, close your ears if you're listening. Nikola Vucevic. Yeah, all of a sudden it doesn't feel right. But I don't know. Maybe he'll get his way. Maybe everything will finally go through Nikola Vucevic. But that's where the Chicago Bulls are right now. Tell you what. Let's take a break right now, and when we come back, let's keep the Bulls talk going, because we are expecting to be joined by Bulls broadcaster Stacey King and the host of the Gimme the Hot Sauce podcast. Looking forward to a conversation with Stacey King next. I'm Mark Grody on The Score.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We are talking about the Chicago Bulls. Matas Bezalis was drafted last night, but we're looking at the bigger picture stuff like Josh Giddey and what it means for DeMar DeRozan, and sounding more and more like DeMar DeRozan could be headed elsewhere than the Chicago Bulls. I mean, any number of reasons now, I suppose, but I think the number one reason that I don't think he's going to be back is because DeMar DeRozan's not going to want to be back, because the Bulls are going to take a hit this year. That's just what's going to happen. And I doubt DeRozan at this point in his career, every year that you're into your middle 30s, it's urgent as an athlete. That's urgency, assuming you are one that wants to win. And DeMar DeRozan has been very clear about wanting to win and to be a winner, which he has been most of his career. So I think it's very little chance that DeMar DeRozan is going to be with the Chicago Bulls at this point. As for Zach LaVine, there's no way he's back with the Bulls. They will trade him too. I don't know that anybody's going to be happy with whatever quote-unquote haul they end up getting for LaVine, but both those guys will be gone by the time this season begins. Let's hear, though, from Arturis Karnišovas on what is the direction of the team.
I think directional stuff we're going to be able to more establish in a week or two. So we're going to wait. I'm going to let the free agency process work it out, and we're going to have more information. I can comment that later.
Okay. All right. Got more meetings to have, and I guess no GM is going to come out and say exactly what they're working on, what they want to do, but I suppose there's some generalized things that can be used to throw out there occasionally. But I guess we're all just going to have to wait and see what the exact direction is. But it's starting to take place, and that is to be, if nothing else, younger. I mean, you're like I said, I'm not seeing DeMar DeRozan or Zach LaVine on this roster, and then you bring in a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old. Yeah, Bezalis is only 19. And Josh Giddey is 21. So you're going younger, and you are going unproven. So that's kind of a dangerous place to be, especially if you're a veteran player. Last thing from Arturis Karnišovas He was asked how Matas Bozelis and Josh Giddey may fit.
So I'm very qualified to say his name, you know, Matas Bozelis. Yeah, his versatility, it's very, you know, evident, you know, in terms of his position. Our league is moving towards, you know, like multi-positional wings, you know, and just size and athleticism and versatility. He can put it on the floor and then switchability, right? You know, he averaged more than 2 blocks per game. So, you know, I don't know exactly what to expect, you know, next year, but I know that those guys are going to be on the floor and they're very versatile. So, and then, you know, we'll, once we know after a couple of weeks what we look like, we can, you know, obviously talk organizational and obviously with Billy how we're going to play.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see those guys presumably in summer league when, you know, that's not necessarily a real indication, but it's a start. It's a start, and I'll be more interested in that part of the season, which I think we'd all kind of lost interest in this Bulls core, and it sure feels like Karnišovas waited 1 year longer than he had to, but now he's doing it. And I do think about one of the guys that I'm really fascinated to see what he does for an encore is Kobe White. Was last year truly a coming out party to a guy that is turning into a star? Like, he's not there yet, but is he on that trajectory? I like being able to ask that question. That is definitely a positive part of the Bulls that we've gotten to this point with Kobe White, who felt like at one point he was easily on his way out the door, be an easy guy to make a decision on come contract time. And he changed that whole thing last year. It changed fast for Kobe White. And now we get to ask questions like, could he be a star? So I sure like that. I like that part. And, you know, there's still Ayo Dosunmu. And you know who's going to be who's officially feels like the oldest piece on the team and maybe starting to become unnecessary? Gabe Ramirez, close your ears if you're listening. Nikola Vucevic. Yeah, all of a sudden it doesn't feel right. But I don't know. Maybe he'll get his way. Maybe everything will finally go through Nikola Vucevic. But that's where the Chicago Bulls are right now. Tell you what. Let's take a break right now, and when we come back, let's keep the Bulls talk going because we are expecting to be joined by Bulls broadcaster Stacey King and the host of the Gimme the Hot Sauce podcast. Looking forward to a conversation with Stacey King next. I'm Mark Grody on The Score.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.